Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Getting Sidetracked. Yes, we still exist. We are still here. We are still going to be doing shows, and we're going to try to get a little bit more regular now that we've kind of gotten some of the other new projects on the network up and running. So I think you can, at this point, we can finally say that you can start to look forward to more episodes of Getting Sidetracked. And we are going to be rotating hosts in and out of the show, as we said before. Coincidentally, as just kind of a random happenstance as a result of the topic we're doing this week, we happen to have the same hosts as we did last time. So, not that that's a bad thing. But I am joined tonight by Shannon and by Andrea. Shannon, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm ready to roll. I'm ready to rumble.
All Ooh. Right. And I think that this is going to be one of those types of episodes. This is going to be interesting. Andrea, how are you doing?
Thanks. I am so excited for today's episode. I am really excited to go deeper into it. So let's get the show on the run.
Yeah. In fact, the topic for this episode is your fault.
Yes, it is.
So here's what we're going to do. There is an article over at theodysseyonline.com. called the 17 best unpopular opinions from the minds of millennials. And Andrea had this crazy idea that we should probably take a look at this on an episode of Getting Sidetracked. So that's what we're going to do. Andrea, I'm going to dump this all on you, the entire responsibility for this episode.
If friendships are lost, if people break up, it's all my fault. I take full responsibility because we will be.
I think we're going to throw down on this.
Oh,
so
yes.
We've got a list. You're going to introduce this and kind of explain what's going on. We're going to go down a list of unpopular opinions from the minds of millennials. And we are all going to comment on whether or not we agree with these opinions or not. So, Andrea, why don't you take it from here?
All right. So for anybody that does not know, unpopular opinions, as described by the website that Eric mentioned, is a colloquial term for any belief or viewpoint that is considered generally disagreeable or unwelcomed by the majority within the community. And there have been a lot of times where, and I think that Shannon can agree with this, that we will go into Twitter and then there will be an unpopular opinion and it just becomes so chaotic, but it's so much fun because we really do want to get that viewpoint as to why people have such a big issue with some of the things that are very unpopular in terms of opinions. So we'll just start right from the get-go. The very first unpopular opinion, get ready, guys.
I'm ready.
Sit down, don't fall. My favorite pizza is Hawaiian pizza.
Hawaiian pizza being...
First of all, did you just say pizza?
Pizza. Why?
You said what now?
I swore I heard pizza, not pizza.
Was there a K in there?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that that's what you wanted out of the debate on this episode. But
I'm sorry. Okay. That's the wrong unpopular opinion. But I have to say something.
And you can't blame it on Canada because my family's Canadian and they don't call it pizza.
Now I'm so like...
But Hawaiian pizza is Canada's fault.
That's very true.
Just to clarify, my understanding of Hawaiian pizza is that it's got ham and pineapples on it, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I can do the ham, but pineapples should never be on a pizza ever. I would rather have sardines
like
on a pizza,
but...
which I don't want, but I'd rather have that than pineapple.
Yeah, I like pineapple, mm-hmm. but I do not like it anywhere near my savory sauce.
Mm-mm.
I do not like it anywhere near my cheese.
Mm-mm.
I am an East Coast girl, and I like my pizza the way they make it in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want your pineapple near my dang
mm-hmm.
pizza.
Preach it, sister.
Do not. Mm-hmm. I want my thin crust.
Yep.
I want my thin crust. No pineapple.
I have to agree that P-I-Z-Z-A should not have.
She was going to say pizza again.
I think that's an accent thing. Don't make fun of me.
Okay.
I do not understand it. I do not like mixing sweet with sour. It's just, and especially on a pizza, I'd rather put a million other things. No, I said it again. Shannon, stop it. Can we like beep every single time I say pizza?
We could. We could. We're not
every
going
time
to.
You need
but
to say
yeah, we
pizza.
Could. The technology.
Ask me
exists.
To say pizza for you. No. Every time you say pizza, tell me I'll just go pizza.
Okay. So
it must suck. Like if they had Little Caesars up there in Ontario, do they? Where yes. The guy goes pizza. You know, the little Roman guy with the spike. And
stop making fun of me.
I'm trying, but it's so difficult.
Now you know how we all feel.
Anyways, I don't like pineapple in my
pizza.
In your Italian pie.
Yes. Yeah, on your tomato pie.
Yes. Okay. And there have been Twitter wars over this.
There have been wars in real life over this.
Shout out to the Sharness.
Yes.
At the Sharness on Twitter.com.
I just. So I guess we can move on to the next one. Unless you'd like
no
to talk
bueno.
About. What were we talking about again, Andrea?
I don't know. What
was the last
what
topic?
Were we talking about?
No bueno pizza.
Okay. We're cutting this whole entire thing out.
We're not cutting kidding. A thing. Go on.
All
keep
right.
Going.
One that does not involve
pizza
is binge watching television is not fun and actually difficult to do.
Watching television in a bin. Yes, that would be. That would be difficult.
Erica,
well, I mean, how big is the bin though? Because
Eric, I was gonna let it go. You didn't let it go. I was gonna let it go because I was so mean about
pizza. Be like me and Shannon going head to head on this. So far, I think
it's just Shannon laughing at Andrea. Yeah.
So binge watching television
is
not fun and actually difficult to do. So
damn, this is a hard episode.
It is, right? It's hard doing a podcast.
Here, I'll go.
Okay.
So I binge watch things a lot, but I have ADHD. So It's very hard for me to binge watch because I want to do stuff right. While I'm binge watching. And so I started shifting gears. I don't watch shows I actually want to pay attention to when I binge watch. Anymore because I can't. I literally can't. I'll have, I don't know, SVU playing, or I'll have like a reality show on Netflix or some goofy thing. But like, I really wanted to watch, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is one of the only shows that I can watch and do something while I'm watching it because I can still get the punchlines. I can still pay attention to what's going on. But like,
right.
God forbid I want to watch like Westworld or. I've been dying to watch A Handmaid's Tale, but I don't want to sit here and feel like I can't do anything because I need to be able to do something at the same time. I can't just sit.
Yeah, people underestimate if you have ADHD, like you're doing something with your brain and you're doing something with your eyes, but your hands sometimes need to be doing something.
I'm so twitchy.
Yeah, well, that's why I learned to solve a Rubik's Cube. This past year is because I ended up binge watching so much TV. I needed something to do with my hands instead. But you mentioned a good point too. Something like Brooklyn Nine-Nine or a lot of sitcoms, it's really dialogue heavy. Mm-hmm. But then like I was watching the last episode of Westworld and I was doing something else and I was on Discord on my phone and stuff like that. And typically I am very much against that sort of thing while I'm watching something. But recently I, you know, for various reasons, I find myself doing it. And I realized I had to stop and start the episode over because so much of Westworld is visual and it's about the expressions on the faces of the actors, things like that. So you can't really do it with some shows. But binge watching in general versus regular watching, I do binge watch and it is fun to do. The thing that I don't like about binge watching is more that, like with The Expanse, we watch it week to week. Now, we talk about it on the Type Beam, and that's awesome. But then there are other shows like Netflix releases Altered Carbon all at once. That is totally a show we could be doing a podcast series on, except like people watched the entire thing in one weekend and then got into Discord and said, you know, hey, anybody else watch this? It was really good. And people are like, oh, no, I haven't seen it yet. I need to watch that. And then like the next weekend, someone else will watch it and they'll come in and say, hey, that was really good. But look, there's no water cooler discussion mm-hmm. about it the following morning. Yeah. So there's kind of a downside.
I personally
of
love weekly.
Watching. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a lot of people said that's a plus for Handmaid's Tale because you get that anticipation from week to week. And that's why, you know, right now, since you're talking about The Expanse, there's a huge debate right now in The Expanse, like whether Amazon should continue to release it week to week or do it all at once, because a lot of people surprisingly support week to week because they want to be able to talk about it from episode to episode rather than have somebody watch the whole thing overnight and nobody else can talk about it. I'm really pleased to see so many people agree.
Please bring that up in the next episode of the Tight Beam. We need to discuss that.
I'll talk about that for an hour. Don't you worry.
No, but I do agree. It's a way to decompress. And, you know, after binge watching, you kind of feel crummy. You kind of feel like so meh. I mean, like, where did my day go?
What did I do with my life?
Right.
So it's not fun.
You know, I used to be a big fan. Well, I still am. A big fan of the TV series Lost. And I know some people hate it and stuff because of the ending, but a lot of people will admit that while it was on the air, they enjoyed the series while it was still going. And I think a lot of that was every week there was a lot to take in and people would rewatch the episode and they'd, you know, try to put the puzzle pieces together and stuff like that. And now with binge watching, you don't have to think about it anymore. If there's something that happens and it's confusing, oh, okay, well, the next episode's about to start. I don't have to think about it very much. I'll just wait another 20 seconds for the intro to get through. Even Netflix, you can hit the button to skip it. And then you're right back in the show again. So there are some downsides to binge watching. It's great in the sense that you don't have to wait anymore, but sometimes waiting allows you to process what you just took in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Next one, guys. Hopefully I don't say anything wrong with this one, since this is just the third one. I love puns. Dad jokes for the win. I love puns. Dad jokes are really funny.
I love puns when I do puns. I don't like puns when other... I'll give you another still on The Expanse. To this day, I am enraged that for two seasons, we had Stephen Strait's name next to a freaking Strait in the title sequence. If it were me,
that I'd is be like, listen. I'm into puns, but that is
so funny.
That is a deep pun. Like that's really pun. Inside baseball there to go with that level of pun.
But
kudos for that because that's a good catch.
It's so good. The thing is though, like that enrages me on a funny level.
That's
like
hilarious.
I know it's funny, but it makes me angry.
Uh-huh.
But if I had done it, if I had been like and edited that sequence and put that there, I think it was hilarious. It's
and then you'd be
I
upset
don't
that
like
nobody
puns.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like people using puns on me. I like using puns on other people.
I have to make a conscious effort to not make puns. Like for me, it's just natural. It's the most natural form of humor.
It's a dad joke.
I did it before I was a dad. I got in just as much trouble for that's what she said jokes before I was a dad than I did after. And let me tell you, I am the king of that's what she said jokes. I had a coworker that I
phrasing
had crying sometimes from laughing so hard and not because they were good jokes. They just, you know, they're unexpected, but I think puns, like sometimes they're pretty lame or they're too easy and people groan at them and I get it, but.
I like the brainchild of that's what she said jokes, which is Archer's phrasing. That's my favorite. I prefer phrasing, but that's what she said. And also from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the name of Amy's sex tape. If either of you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah. Yep.
Like every time that comes up, I laugh so much. And the first time it was the name of our sex tape. I lost it.
That's the name of my Journey cover band or, you know, things like that. Yeah. And The Office, Michael Scott, of course, with the that's what she said. That's classic too.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
I love those jokes. The only thing is that I'm very slow at processing jokes, so it'll take a good 3 to 4 minutes for me to get fine. It. And
that's
then
fine.
I just howl.
That explains
I will laugh
the best.
So
pizza.
Hard.
Yeah, I prefer that because then it's like there's that surprise epiphany of, oh my gosh, that's what you meant. And like to me, I would rather have that delayed thing because then it's like, it's like you get it twice.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I love that. I will say this shout out to Joel from the Pubcast. He is definitely amongst some of the, he's one of the better punsters I know. And then also, if you are on Twitch at all, there is a Twitch streamer named, I want to make sure I pronounce his correctly here, Giddawid, G-I-D-D-A-W-I-D. He is an awesome guy. I know him personally, like through the internet and stuff. A very cool dude, very good streamer, but he is also a king of puns. So shout out to both of them. I love puns. Puns are like awesome.
All right, next one. If you are a tea drinker, then you might have something to say about this one. Milk in the cup first, then the bloody tea.
No.
Now, wait a minute. So, like, if
no.
we have British listeners, now I have to
you
bleep
have
something out.
You have to have the tea.
That's what it said.
That's not my fault. I think you can't say bloody in Britain because it's like saying the F word here, right? Like, we would have to cut that out.
The tea has to steep. The tea has to steep.
Right?
Agree,
so
Shannon.
Why in the hell would you be putting, here's the thing. They're not telling me, do they heat the milk? Are they putting cold milk on tea and then hot water? If you're putting hot milk in, I might be like, okay, maybe. But it sounds like you're telling me you put in cold milk first. And like, you have to steep the tea. You are now changing the temperature of the water. Your tea will take longer to steep. Mm-hmm. I work in a cafe. I know steeping times for teas. You're ruining the tea. You should put the milk in after you let it steep for a little bit, because then you're not messing with the temperature of the water.
The only tea that I put milk in is Orange Pico, and I have to steep it first. It has to be completely 100% concentrated. Like, it needs to be black, and then I'll add some milk to it.
The only thing I put in my tea is lemon. That's only if I'm drinking black English breakfast.
Oh, I can't do lemon. Lemon makes me feel sick. Like,
well, that's my thing.
It just makes me feel like I have a cold or I have to take some lemon something with it.
It cuts the bitterness of the black tea. It's the only time, though, that I mess with tea. Any other tea I drink, I do not touch. I do not touch Earl Grey. I do not touch any of my caffeinated tea or decaffeinated teas. I don't put anything in my teas. My dad raised me lemon in the black tea because he only drinks English breakfast, and it's all he drinks aside from beer. So that's how he gets it. That's how he gets his water. He just drinks tea. So I am used to lemon in my English breakfast. Everything else is no. But if you're gonna do it, because I do it for plenty of my customers, if you're putting that milk in first, boy, it better be hot. Because otherwise you're messing with your tea. It's not going to steep right. It's going to take longer, or the temperature is just going to keep dropping and your tea is going to be weak. And it sucks because it's weak like your constitution and your spine.
I'm so confused.
Do you not drink tea?
I do occasionally. You know who drinks tea? Tim is a connoisseur of teas. He has people he knows that he's met that are overseas, and they send him tea from other countries. He's not a snob about it or anything. He's very educated on tea. He's particular about it, and et cetera. And I'd like to know his take on this. I messaged him to see if he'll respond, but I think he's recording another show right now, if I'm correct. But he responded with, huh? Just answer the question. Okay.
So while we wait
I drink tea, but like anything, why would you put the additives first, and then I don't measure things. So, but I know what, like what type of color I want my coffee to be or my tea. So like I pour that first and then I pour enough until it turns the color I want. And then I know that that's when I've got the right amount. I don't build a hamburger by getting the bun and putting the ketchup and the mustard and the onions and the mayonnaise and stuff on first and then go find a hamburger to put on it. Like, why would you add the condiments first and then put the actual thing?
Like different. If I'm
gonna put, I don't put salt on my plate and then dump a bunch of French fries on it.
Right. And I want to specify as a barista that I'm talking about at home, because obviously if the barista is making your coffee, we have measurements on our cups. We know how much to put in there. Sometimes we'll put it in last, but like we have to put syrup and stuff in first. We have to put sugar in first. It's easier to mix it. But if you're at home, don't put your milk in first. I swear to God.
She will hunt you down. She will find you.
I don't do that with my own coffee at home. I make the coffee first and then I put all my stuff in it because I, you know, sometimes I don't want as much milk in it, you know?
Right.
So I feel like if I put the milk in first, I am obligated to use that much milk. I'm obligated. Like I can't undo it now. So like. So
I feel like this is like really overthinking something that's like, not that you're overthinking it, Shannon, but like this is just like the concept here is kind of ridiculous. Like, why do people talk about this? Speaking of which, by the way, so I said to Tim in Discord, I said, true or false, milk in the cup first, then the bloody tea. I'm sorry to our British listeners, then the tea. And he says, huh? And I said, just answer the question. He said, false. So he agrees.
Okay.
Tea, then milk. See? And when it comes to how to do tea properly, aside from being, you know, a cafe worker, or a barista or something like that, like I would trust Tim. So there you go.
Perfect. So we got closure on that one from somebody that enjoys tea. Next one. I wish dogs were allowed more into more places and kids were allowed into fewer places.
Oh, can I take this one?
Sure.
Okay. Excuse me.
Oh, gosh.
Holy crap, false. Okay? Now, I don't have a problem with dogs being allowed in more places, except... I'm gonna piss a lot of people off here. So there's two different things here. First of all, if you have a service dog, you should be able to take it anywhere. If you have a therapy dog and you need a therapy dog, you should be able to take it nearly anywhere. And I want to clarify, I say this as someone with autism who is seeking to get a therapy dog and with a son who has autism and I'm working on getting him a therapy dog. I take therapy dogs seriously. If you are a cranky person and sometimes you get upset about things, you do not need a therapy dog. You need some counseling. Maybe you need a better perspective on life. You do not need a therapy dog, okay? And you should not get to take that therapy dog into restaurants where they serve food, into grocery stores, et cetera, et cetera. Delta Airlines should not have to put out a press release stating that you are no longer allowed to travel with your therapy cricket, your therapy hedgehog, or your therapy bird in the cabin of their airplanes. I kid you not.
But it's Jiminy Cricket.
So, anyway. So, I have no problem with dogs being allowed in more places, except there are some places where they should just not be anyway, unless they are service dogs or actually needed therapy dogs. Number one, people are milking the fact that it's basically illegal for an employee at a place of work to ask you for proof that it is a therapy dog, because that is considered basically them requesting a HIPAA violation, though that's not how HIPAA violations work either, but it's an invasion of your privacy, except so next point on this. If people were better at managing their pets, then maybe pets would be allowed in more places. When you take your dog to a dog park and you get attacked and your dog gets attacked and the person whose dog it is sitting there on their phone saying, oh, he's just being playful, as your leg is bleeding all over the ground, you should not get to take your dog anywhere at all, let alone in more places. Okay. People need to be more responsible with their pets. Likewise, kids should not be allowed in fewer places. They should be allowed in more, because kids should be taught how to behave in as many different public areas as possible. And kids should learn that what's appropriate in one public area is not necessarily socially appropriate in another public area. But the problem isn't the kids. The problem is the parents. The problem's not the dogs. The problem's the dog owners. I will now step down off of my soapbox, as much as I really don't want to, for the sake of time.
No, I agree with what you said. Shannon, do you have anything to say about this?
I love dogs, but, you know, for me, it's more like not every family can afford a babysitter. And, you know, not every family is able to quickly find a babysitter. So if someone has to bring their kids somewhere, you know, just because you're young and for some reason millennial culture is like anti-child.
Right.
Not like anti-having children. They're literally like, I've seen so many young people say how much they find kids annoying, forgetting that they were once an annoying kid. Mm-hmm. But you're basically saying, oh, well, you know, you couldn't afford a babysitter, then you shouldn't go out. Or your babysitter got sick and couldn't like watch your kid. Well, you should be a good parent, stay at home. That's not what good parenting is.
I've got an example of that I'd like to share when you're done.
I just like, you know, I would love to be able to pet more dogs, but I don't think it should come at the cost of like a mom on her only day off that couldn't get someone to watch her kid just wants to go to the bookstore for an hour. Or just wants, you know, to go out for some air, especially a single parent. I don't think that's fair. And I don't think it's fair to shame. Like, there are certain places that maybe you shouldn't bring a kid. Absolutely.
A bar.
And yeah,
but otherwise, like, where? Strip club. Yeah.
Yeah.
There aren't many.
Yeah. And, you know, you're not sorry the world doesn't cater to you and make children less, you know,
right.
Obvious, like quieter. But, you know. Just because someone, you know, a kid shouldn't have to give up their whole life because they have a kid.
Right. Nor should the world stop because it's inconvenient for you to be around an age of human being that you don't have a particular affinity for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, get over it.
Yeah.
So a few years back, my wife and I went on a cruise. This was part of, so there's a musical artist, Jonathan Colton. Very popular with millennials, big internet following, etc. Really cool guy, just as a person, very cool. And every year he does a cruise where, you know, he invites all of his fans and stuff to sign up to go on this cruise. He does a concert on the cruise. They've got guests. They've, you know, Wil Wheaton was one of the guests, and John Hodgman, and some of the cast from Mythbusters. It's a lot of like geek related celebrities and stuff like that. And it's just, it's fun. And, you know, they're all accessible, and, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of people that go on these things. So we went. And because another couple who are friends of ours were also going, they took their young daughter. We took our young son. We're talking like maybe 4 or 5 years old. And one of the concerts, one of the first nights of the cruise, you know, we went and we took our son and he enjoyed it and everybody enjoyed it. And then the next morning on Twitter, because we had, this is how geeky they are. They actually kind of, they set up their own fake Twitter server with a website designed to be able to use this fake Twitter service that was then run through the local Wi-Fi for the cruise, but it didn't connect to the actual internet. So you didn't have to pay the prices to use the internet to connect to. So it was almost like we hijacked the cruise's Wi-Fi to have our own Twitter service and stuff. Anyway, it blew up the next morning because how dare these people take their kids on the cruise at all, let alone to a concert. And those of us with kids were like, well, A, what business is it of yours? Our kid was well-behaved. He didn't get in your way. And frankly, we were sitting in the back. I'm surprised you even noticed that there was a kid there. And second, there's nothing saying we can't have a kid on the cruise. And we don't tell you how to live your lives. But these people were livid. And we just, to this day, we still don't understand. Other than the fact that apparently it is kind of a millennial thing. But I'm sorry, without kids, you do understand, like, humanity dies, right? Like, the earth will be populated by antelope and zebras and hedgehogs, and that'll be it. all due respect to antelope and zebras and hedgehogs, but there won't be any humans left if there aren't kids. So get over it.
I do agree with what Shannon was saying, that like, just because you have a kid, your life doesn't stop.
And
that should not prohibit you from going places. And
why shouldn't the kid get to experience cool things
exactly.
too?
Exactly. And why is a child seen as like kind of like a burden? They shouldn't. So,
I mean, they are, let's be clear, they are a burden, but they're a burden that is worth far more than the cost of the burden. But that's the thing. I mean, let's face it. They are a burden. So then why not, when you have an opportunity to make something good out of the burden of raising a child and have that wonderful experience of getting to share something valuable with the child, why not take advantage of it?
Yeah.
It's not costing anybody else anything. We didn't hurt the enjoyment of the other people on the cruise, other than that they worked themselves up so much that they raised their own blood pressure and decided to go and rant about it to everybody over something that had no effect on them. But yeah, that they should get to experience cool things too.
So we are against this one. So we want kids in more places, dogs in fewer, if the owner is not abiding by rules.
Fake therapy dogs in fewer, and dogs whose owners shouldn't be dog owners in fewer. Yeah, I don't blame the dogs. It's the owners. Except you, dog. I blame you. You need to go sit down. I blame my dog. That's different.
All right. So the next one. Space Jam was a crappy movie.
Yes.
False.
Eric.
Nope. We can move on.
It was so much fun.
It was are you serious?
It was a lot of fun.
Oh my gosh.
Here's the thing.
They're making a sequel now too, right?
Here's the thing.
I don't care about that one.
Here's the thing. Enjoyment does not equal quality.
You're right.
But I will not let someone tell me a movie I love is crappy if I love it.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was really funny.
Shannon's not going to let me speak.
Come
then.
On and slam. And welcome to the jam. Come on and slam. And welcome to the jam.
The song is even worse than the movie.
Eric, why don't you like Space Jam? It's not your jam.
Why should I have to prove it? Like, explain to me why I should like it. Like, there's. Well, I mean, there's nothing. The Bugs Bunny and his crew go kidnap Michael Jordan to play a basketball game. Well, they could have just bought tickets. Like, it's.
You're not supposed to apply logic to a kids' movie. Number one.
With the Looney Tunes. Yeah, you can't, Eric.
The Lion King is impossible because lions can't
okay,
talk.
Okay, if you want to go there. Okay, so.
Toy Story is not real.
Looney Tunes, like, yes, they have their own kind of loony, toony way of doing things. None of which was really represented in this film. Like, it didn't even feel like a Looney Tunes film. It felt like a money grab.
Now. Shannon, we should
Michael
watch
Jordan
it?
Stretched his arm across an entire basketball court
right,
for this.
Right. He can afford the medical bills. He can. Dude's rich. Like, I'm not talking like he's doing okay. I mean, I'm talking like he's rich. You know? Okay.
This movie was made for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Dude. We were children. Yeah. It was
you,
a children's
Eric.
Movie.
It was.
Oh, it was fun. Anyways, Eric's opinion doesn't matter in this one.
Moving on.
Artificial intelligence is going to start causing mass unemployment.
Artificial intelligence, as someone who's worked in the IT industry for ages, is going to radically reduce the availability of huge sections of the job market that exist currently, much like in the way that other aspects of computer automation already have. I think what's going to happen is those jobs are going to shift into other types of jobs. I don't think it's necessarily going to cause mass unemployment. I think those people will find jobs either elsewhere in the IT industry or in other industries. But yeah, artificial intelligence is going to automate a lot of the things that already, like, people aren't going to have to design and implement certain things manually anymore because AI will take care of it. And keep in mind, AI is not... it's not artificial consciousness either. Mm-hmm. AI has been around for years and is actively being utilized already. It's not one of these like science fiction movie concepts. People confuse the two. It's not artificial consciousness. It's artificial intelligence. It's adaptive learning by computers. It's
every single time that I think of this, it reminds me of WALL-E. And that's where the future's going. I'm so
well,
wrong,
I'm not saying the future's not going there. I'm just saying I don't think it's because of this.
Oh, well, I don't know. Every single time I think about it, it just makes me think that.
I mean, somebody has to supervise the intelligence. I mean, sometimes it's going to get wonky.
Yeah, it's an organization called Skynet.
What's his name? Is it Winston? Is that the name of IBM's little computer friend? He learned how to curse and they had to go in and unteach him that. Like, there's still going to be, you know, jobs available. Somebody has to oversee these processes because they're not perfect and they will make mistakes or start to do things where they'll adapt in the wrong way and you have to fix them and get them back on track. Because this little computer man decided that he wanted to go on Urban Dictionary and have a good time. And they were like, oh no, no, no. So like, yeah, this is IBM. These are the guys. They're like, oh God, our computer taught itself how to curse. We got to fix this. So, you know, jobs will adapt. Jobs have always adapted. Things have always changed. There's always been, like, you know, cobblers, right? We don't really have cobblers, but we have people who, like, you know, oversee those things. Or I'm not going to go into sweatshops.
Robotics and stuff. Industry, it's been the same thing.
You still have to service them. You still have to oversee what they're doing and make sure they're not falling apart or putting a part on wrong, that they're programmed correctly. More jobs will come.
It just might be,
and then you adapt to work those jobs.
It'll be in different areas. Like, it did take away jobs from factory workers on factory assembly lines. It's just those workers ended up then going into either other areas of production or into other industries. I don't know, like, the unemployment rate took a hit and then it recovered. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've still got factory workers. Excuse me. You've still got factory workers assembling iPhones in China. I mean, it's not all robotics. It's just, you know, things are going to change and things are going to adapt and the unemployment rate is going to go up and down as a result, but it's going to continue to balance itself out.
All right. Moving to the next one. I almost butchered that word. Execution is more important than strategy.
False.
Okay.
Shannon. There are so many poorly executed things that how can you say just throwing any old crap out there that you can produce, that doesn't mean that it's good that you didn't take the time to have a strategy first.
Execution is still strategy. It's a different strategy. No, it's improvising.
There are things where people have executed things with a lack of strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. However, it's, you know, whatever way you get to execution, there is some sort of a thought behind it. That thought is still a strategy. Whether or not it's a good strategy or not is a different story.
If
you know what I'm saying,
because
I've
true,
done things,
then I agree. I just disagree that there's always thought before action.
Well, no, like, I know a lot about this.
By executing people,
I'll do things.
Yes.
No,
she's a killer.
acting impulsively. Mm-hmm. There's still a thought behind my action. I might not have caught up with it, but like, I still, like, if I bought something at the store just because, you know, I saw it and I was like, I want this. It's like, when I think about it, it's like, wow, you know, I still wanted it, whether or not I actually thought about if I should have it.
Right.
If I have the money for it, blah, blah, blah. All the thoughts that come with that, doesn't matter. It's still a thought. It's still a purpose. It's still a direction.
So you're saying that the statement is faulty because it indicates that one precludes the other.
Yeah.
Now, is every thought the same as a strategy?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, whether or not it's a good thing, whether or not your direction that you're sending yourself in is well thought out, mm-hmm. or nothing at all, it's still a direction. So, like, if I say, you know, My strategy tonight to record, if I sat down and said, okay, here's all my notes, here's all this, blah, blah, mm-hmm. you know, that's a strategy. If I come in, don't look at the notes, because I'm like, oh, I'm just going to wing it. That's a strategy. Like, it's still me putting myself in a direction towards execution. But I think it's the level of strategy is where my question lies. It's
See, I disagree with, I understand where you're coming from. And it's that the logic behind it, I agree with. I disagree with the definition. I think a definition of strategy. I think for me, strategy isn't simply the making of a decision as much as it is considering different factors and weighing the options against one another, which is not always what takes place when someone thinks about, like in your example just now, I wouldn't consider that a strategy toward tonight's show. I would consider that a decision to not implement a strategy for tonight's show, but to merely show up and execute it as you go along.
Yeah, see, I don't take strategies literally.
Fair enough. That's probably my autism.
Call of Duty and stuff like that, you can go both ways. You can just go with just execution and literally.
So back to the pun thing. I didn't know whether to go with the fact that you said duty or whether to go with the going both ways thing and throwing that's what she said joke. But then I realized like we moved on from the pun thing a few topics ago. But you can't throw out lines like that, Andrea. You're killing me.
No. I just see strategy as plan, and it's still a plan.
Well, the thing is that, okay.
Is it a good plan?
Let me explain what I was going to say before, though. That's what she said in puns. If you're playing Call of Duty, shut up, Eric. You can go both ways. You can. What is
wrong? I quit.
Oh, you're too young for Beavis and Butthead, aren't you?
I'm not.
Okay. Shannon got it.
I didn't.
I wish
fire,
I did.
Fire.
What is wrong with him?
You want the list? We don't have time. Go ahead.
Okay. So if you're playing Call of Duty, this is the third time I'm saying it.
I know. It's awesome. I'm going to see if I can make you say the fourth.
You can strategize the way that you're going to play with people, or you can go guns blazing and not give a two beeps about anybody mm-hmm. else. Other than just the way that you're going to play. That's just, is that what you're trying to get at in terms of?
Yeah, but Shannon is arguing that in itself is a strategy because that's what you've chosen to do. And that you must have chosen it because you feel that is the best approach. And in making that decision, that becomes your strategy. Am I correct, Shannon, that's kind of what?
Yeah. I'm associating strategy with plan.
I see that. I have a different interpretation of it, but that's just one way in which people are different in how they see things. So
moving along. All right. Mm-hmm. Good parenting is worth the trouble, but not because it produces great kids.
Then why?
I don't know.
Like if it's worth the trouble, but it's not producing great kids that makes it worth it, then what is it that makes good parenting worth it? Feeling better about yourself as a parent?
Yeah. Or like having yourself on the back, whether you did a good job or not.
Your own insecurities about your self-value? Like,
I don't know, Aaron.
He's still getting drunk and going to prison, but I was a good parent.
I mean, produces great kid. I mean, part of this is kind of a loaded question, too, because how do you define great kid?
Yeah,
So let's reword that and say, you know, but not because it produces like well-raised kids. Could we say that?
Sure.
Okay.
Respectful individuals of society.
So if that's the case, then I question what it is that makes you think it's worth the trouble. So I'm going to call this one false. I think this is nonsense.
I do agree with that. Shannon?
It's hard. Because, you know, it's such an objective thing, you know, because
there's a lot of factors that play into a child being raised, just parenting.
Well, yeah. And it's not even just that. It's like, what's a gauge of good parenting? Because, you know, I might think that well, my parents might think they did a fantastic job because I'm a good kid. I might not see it that way because of how I was treated growing up to become a good kid.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
Like I've been through things that made me unhappy to get to the point where I am. So
right.
My gauge of whether the parenting style that I was raised with is good or not is going to be different from what they think. And certainly they're going to present a painting of what our family life is like out to other people. Like there's no real good gauge of what good parenting is as well as what a great kid is, like, because everybody puts something up.
Right. So for the sake of discussion here, let's assume that we're presenting this line, this question, based on if you are a parent, you believing that you are truly doing parenting to the best of your ability, and it being worth the trouble. Parenting is trouble. I mean, we just said having a kid is a burden. It's, yeah, it's a wonderful burden. That's definitely worth it, but it is a burden. So going through the difficulty of doing what you think is right as a parent, even when it's difficult or inconvenient, is worth the trouble. So is it worth the trouble because it produces well-raised kids, or is it worth the trouble for some other reason?
I think it's worth the trouble because you could be like there. I know plenty of people
but
who are
great.
What
makes it worth the trouble?
What? I didn't know that was the question.
Yeah, because they're saying
I'm still
it's
working
worth the trouble.
To it, though.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm still working to it.
I agree with you. It's worth the trouble. I just the question makes it sound like it's worth the trouble, but not because of the results.
Yeah, well, because that's what I'm getting to, though, because you could have a really shitty kid, but like, you know, you still respect them and you're being a good person.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, you're not just a parent, you're a person. And so, you know, if you're being a good person to your kid, whether or not they accept that or not, you're still a good person. Okay. It's worth the effort to be a good person to your kid.
So you're saying it's an integrity thing. If you're doing the right thing because you're doing the right thing, even if your kid turns out horrible, you know that you were a good parent to the best of your abilities and you had some integrity about it. And that's what makes it worth it, knowing that you did the right thing for your kid, not whether or not your kid succeeded.
Because it's not necessarily your fault if your kid is a horrible person.
I retract my opinion. I think yours is correct. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, because I know some terrible people who have great parents, who have great people.
Yeah, no, you're
right.
Who,
like, treat everyone like their own kids, and their child is still, like, a monster. Like, there's nothing you can really, you know, there's only so much you can do because they get influences from other places.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if you're doing your best to, you know, let your kid be a person and treat your kid as a person like you are, then yeah, I think it's worth it. It's worth it to be a good person.
I do agree with what Shannon is saying, and it goes back to that idea of nature versus nurture. You can do as much nurturing and stuff like that. But again, it's just there are other factors that will ultimately shape who you become. And what you as a parent can give to your child is build that foundation. And the way that the child built it is ultimately up to them.
Yeah.
But you did good in whichever way you could. It's very interesting because this might tie into it. There's a quote from Morticia from the Addams Family. She talks about what we consider normal. And she says, normal is an illusion. What is normal to the spider is chaos to the fly. And I think that the whole entire idea of, okay, what consists of being a good parent falls into that, because there is no really actual good definition. Because like what you said, your experiences as growing up might have not always been good or easy, but your parents thought, like, okay, this is the way where Shannon can go and be a good kid. You know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
I
retract what I said before, to the extent that I think if you look at this objectively, then Shannon is absolutely right. And I didn't look at it from that perspective. Now, I will say that, and I think anybody who has kids will admit that this is true of them. They had certain thoughts about parenting and what it would be like being a parent, what you should do being a parent. And then when you have kids, all that goes out the window and you have a completely different outlook on things once you actually are responsible for this other human life that is, you know, a part of you and et cetera. I can say that me as a parent, I value integrity as a person a lot. If you're not being true to yourself, then you've got a whole slew of problems in life that we could have whole other podcast series about, let alone episodes. But so personal integrity to me is something I think we lack too much as individuals, and it's really important. I don't try to be a good parent, whether I'm successful or not. I don't attempt to be a good parent because I feel it's important to my personal integrity. My goal is to have it produce a well-raised child. So while I think that Shannon is correct that the result of the child is not what makes it worth being a good parent. And I think that in this question, that's what it's asking. And so that's correct. I will tell you that my focus in trying to be a good parent, though, is that end result that though I will love my son no matter how he turns out, I'm putting my own interests aside for the sake of trying to make sure that I produce a son who is well-raised, who is respectful mm-hmm. toward other people, who, et cetera. So I'm looking at that end goal. I'm not looking at self-validation or whether yes. I'm doing the right thing.
And it shouldn't be about you. Yeah.
It should be in the extent that you're doing the right thing. But yeah, my focus is different.
It shouldn't be a selfish thing.
It should not be selfish.
I'm doing it for my child, for their future, because this is ultimately who they're going to be.
Right.
And you're not going to be with them all the time, right? So the way that you raise him or her, the foundation that you build is very critical to who they will become outside of those outside factors. So right. I do agree. This was an interesting one.
Yeah, the wording makes it tricky on so many levels. I mean, we had to rephrase the beginning of the sentence. We had to rephrase the end of the sentence. And even then, it's still kind of like, it depends on how you look at it. So, yeah.
All right. Next one. Saying money cannot buy happiness is just wrong.
I agree. Because here's the thing. Our generation especially has no money. I live in the U.S. where everything, our tuition isn't so high. We have to get student loans that put us into debt before we even have jobs. We have to get health insurance at 26. And if we don't have those jobs, we're not guaranteed that health insurance, or it's more expensive because the government isn't guaranteed to help you pay for it. You can't afford to get your own place. So if you're lucky enough to have money enough to live with some roommates, that's cool, but you're unlikely to buy a house, or you're going to be stuck with your parents. It's not necessarily that money cannot buy happiness. It's money can buy you a solid foundation. Money can bring you comfort because you don't have to worry about where your next meal is coming from. You don't have to worry about if you'll have a place to live. You don't have to worry about if you'll be in debt. And I think when people tell young people that money can't buy happiness, it's because they don't understand that we're in a position where we're unhappy because we're stressed about our lives and where they're going to be, because we don't know if we're going to have enough money to do the things that our parents got to do. So I'm trying to think of the right word, because I saw it on Tumblr a bunch of times. There's a post that goes around that, yeah, money can't necessarily buy happiness, but it can buy I forget what the word is, but it makes you confident in the fact that you will not be in a position where you won't have something that is a necessity. Mm-hmm. Especially in this climate, I think it's a statement that shouldn't be thrown at young people, because we're often blamed for our own shortcomings, money-wise, job-wise, debt-wise, even though we didn't make this situation happen. You know, this is the generations before us that put us here, but it's apparently our fault. It's, you know, millennials have a really bad rap for things that aren't even our fault. So when millennials say that money can't buy happiness is wrong, they're not wrong. They're not at all. It absolutely can put you in a better position to be happy, because you do not have the same fears that you have without money.
I will say my comment after Eric.
Okay. At the risk of upsetting Shannon, I emphatically feel that it's wrong. I will say this though. Let me preface this by agreeing with Shannon on a critical point. So I'm of a generation older than yours. My generation, my grandparents' generation blamed my generation for not having the same work ethics and values and for being in the position that we were. I grew up a little bit. Another generation came along. The generation behind me was blamed by my parents' generation for not having the same work ethics, not having the same values, putting themselves in the position that they were. I grew up. The generation after that got blamed by my generation for not having the same work ethics, et cetera, et cetera. I think that this is just that it's part of the cycle of our modern society that the generational gap, especially now that society is rapidly changing due to advances in technology, even prior to the existence of the internet, which ramped things up exponentially when it comes to the speed of change. I think that the gap sometimes between generations, especially if a person isn't able to embrace some of those changes, is widening. And I think that that's where a lot of the judgment comes in. Now, I will say this. I've worked in a few different industries now. I've lived in different countries. I've lived in different climates, different economic tiers. I will say that the vast majority of people that I've interacted with and discussed this topic with, to right up to the point where I've worked in hospitals and have talked to people literally on their deathbeds, like the bed that they were on when I was talking to them is the bed that they died on. Most of the people that I talked to that were rich were very unhappy. The people I talked to who would be considered poor were not all that happy either, but had a higher level of happiness than the rich people did. And the ways in which they found happiness seemed to have a lot more value to their lives than the people who were rich. Now, Shannon is absolutely correct that money will buy you stability.
That's the word I was looking for.
Yep. And stability. It absolutely will. And the lack of stability, without question. I am going through a pretty rough divorce. I have had to move halfway across the East Coast. I am in an area where the industry in which I work just does not exist, period. And my stuff is in boxes. I'm living in an in-law suite in a house that my family has out in farmland. All my possessions, just about, other than what's on this computer desk and a couple of other things, are in boxes. I'm sitting on someone else's couch. I'm sleeping in someone else's bed. I mean, by myself, but they own the bed. Let's be clear on that. But like, it's their furniture. I am one step up from being homeless right now. And I mean that in a very literal way. And there have been points where I was doing better in life financially too. I've seen a lot of different people in different situations. And I think that stability right now is one of the biggest reasons for a lot of the depression that people are going through. Even if they are stable, even the perception of instability or the fear that, yes, I'm stable right now, but I might become unstable tomorrow. That is enough to make people depressed. And right now, so many people are depressed about so many different things. There was a study in the last 10 years, the level of happiness for people in the United States, when they rank different countries, it went from like 4 to 17 or 18 within the last 10 years. And then you look at the political climate and the social climate. And we were just doing a podcast talking about the climate of Star Wars fandom. There's a culture right now of people being aggressive toward one another out of fear. And it's gotta stop. And yes, so money affects all of this. Economic status affects all of this. It affects stability. I will say this, though. I don't think that money in and of itself provides happiness, because the people who have money always seem to tend to be seeking more, and they never achieve it because there's always more beyond what they have achieved. I think it does allow you to buy things and create circumstances that will provide you happiness. But you need to realize that it's those circumstances. It's not the money itself, and it's not the achievement of the money. And I think that Shannon probably agrees with that. And that's kind of what she's getting at. So it does, as you said, you used the word foundation, I think. It does provide a foundation. But really, you need to seek out happiness. The people who have been most happy in my experience of observing people, and I mentioned the autism a lot because it's something I'm still kind of coming to terms with. It's a new discovery for me in my life, but I do recognize that most of my life I've spent observing other people and how they interact and how they live their lives, because it's never made sense to me. So I've spent a lot of time people watching on a very intimate level with this sort of thing. The happiest people I've ever known are the people who find happiness in the time they spend with other people, the experiences they share with other people, and the people who have been the least happy have been people who have had the least meaningful connections with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that looking to money as an association with happiness and trying to find a correlation there is the wrong approach. You need to find a correlation with the interactions and the connections you have with other people to figure out, you know, how to gauge happiness, how to achieve happiness. That's my take on it. So again, it's a literal interpretation of the sentence. I agree with every sentiment that Shannon had. I just, from a literal approach, I would word this differently.
I won't get into too much because we are running at the hour mark.
That's okay. Actually, this is my show and I give you permission. We'll talk all night. It's all good. If people want to tune out, they can tune out. I'm not going to be offended, but we'll keep going.
When it comes to that whole entire idea, money cannot buy happiness. I do agree that it provides a little bit of that comfort, but it's not what makes you happy. I've gone through, and I can say this, hell and back in terms of financial status with my family, what they've gone through to get me to where I am. And although they put this almost like cape of like, oh, we're okay and we're not struggling financially, they never wanted to show us how their struggle was. They always gave us like not everything that we wanted, but things so that we could feel that comfort that we were never struggling. But now looking back, it's like the things that made us happy was not the money or the material things that we got, because ultimately we lost that moving from Venezuela to Canada. We lost so much. And the thing that remained was family. The thing that remained was those friendships, those memories that we made together. And that's the most important thing to me. And again, I don't agree with money can buy happiness. I do feel like, yeah, it can make you happy here and there, but in the long run, I don't think that's the thing that will ultimately make you happy. And that's just me keeping it short and sweet. So that's that.
But those resources do all tie together. Stability provides a protection from fear.
Mm-hmm.
And fear prevents you from feeling happiness. So it's sort of not a trickle-down effect, but it's a circular effect. This affects that, that affects that, that affects that, and it's all circular. So in that regard, money is a contributing factor. It's just, it's not a direct cause.
Yeah. I agree with that. All right. That was a heavy question. That brought me back to some hard times, but,
Thanks a lot, anyway. Andrea.
I'm sorry. It's interesting because you were mentioning about like, oh, where you're living right now. And I remember that when we moved to Canada, it was one room. Mm-hmm. The kitchen was like right there where we were sleeping. And it was
Which is really convenient when you wake up in the middle of the night and you want a snack, right? That's awesome. I'm kidding.
It's hard. It was difficult. And again, it's just... Did I care if I had the latest phone? Did I care if my parents could afford a nice car? Did I care about anything other than just the present moment and just the family being okay? I mean, that's the most important thing. So, all right. On to happier news, maybe. Bacon is extremely overrated, and I think I'm going to get gutted by this one. So I'll leave you guys to it for now.
I need my bacon cooked a specific way. So, like, my bacon needs to be crispy. I can't have any wet bacon. It's gross. It's so gross. Like, it's fatty. But when it's crunchy, like, I can put it on stuff and eat it. But, like, half the places you go, you don't get that crispy bacon. And, like, crispy bacon is delicious. Is it the greatest food ever? But I like it on my burgers. I like it with my eggs. But it has to be crispy. If you're just gonna give me like undercooked bacon. Like when I'm trying to avoid saying things that will make you guys make floppy jokes. Floppy like bacon is what I was thinking.
Flaccid bacon? Is that what
I was thinking floppy bacon.
No, can we actually call it flaccid?
Go for it. I don't care. But I just,
there are different levels of crispiness, though. Like, no, what is your ideal like, level of crispiness?
It's all crispy.
Like a cookie.
The whole thing is crispy.
I like it crispy, but like my mom has, like if she pokes it with a fork and it doesn't crumble into powder, then it's not cooked enough.
No, I just like a good snap. I don't like the fat to still be soft.
Okay.
I want the whole thing to snap. That's what I want.
I like mine.
Because if I put it on a burger, it's going to get like wet anyway because it's got cheese, it's got ketchup.
Right. Like, so why does it matter?
Because I'd rather it be cooked and I know it is cooked.
But is bacon overrated?
I'm saying that I like bacon, but because I'm so particular about it, I don't think it's the greatest thing ever. If it's something that by itself, like I don't have to be particular about, you know what I mean? Like if it were just a food that I liked it anyway, then I would say like, yeah, girl, but I need it to be a particular way. So it's not the greatest food to me. I like the flavor. It's fine. I'm not obsessed with it.
So it's overrated.
A little, yeah.
Okay, Eric?
I would say that for a long time, I felt it was underrated in the sense that it's not as unhealthy as people used to think it was. I think that it's, you know, it's good. I like it. I think that especially like there was a time period like maybe 2 years ago where people were just radically obsessed with bacon, and like people would make little bacon Chewbaccas and post them on the internet, and people would make bacon sandwiches with bacon as the bun and then bacon inside, and then they put bacon on their bacon burger, and like it became a meme, and it was like crazy. This is one person I remember, he ate nothing but bacon for a month. And I'm like, yeah, no, at this point, it is totally overrated.
It's the Epic Meal Time.
I remember Epic Meal Time.
Okay.
That they used to do everything with bacon.
Funny. I remember that.
I think they might be dead.
South Park DVDs, when they first came out, they had these little intro segments before each of the episodes. And in each DVD box set was a different type of thing. Like one was Trey Parker and Matt Stone in a nursing home playing music for a bunch of old people with, you know, they're wearing their preppy sweaters and a little acoustic guitar, but they're like singing death metal songs and stuff. Like it was just ridiculous stuff. One, they had a TV show with a live studio audience and it was Making Bacon with Macon. And Macon was the name of the pig. And they would come out and they would feed the pig bacon.
What?
That's awful.
It was.
That's awful.
And they teach, you know, like the little, the popsicle trays that kids, you can pour the fruit juice into and you put it in the freezer and get little popsicles. So they take the bacon grease.
No. That's awful. Yeah,
it was disgusting. Have to end that. No. And what do they do with it?
Well, they pour the bacon grease into the popsicle trays and then they would freeze them. They'd take them out and they'd give them to the kids as bacon flavored popsicles.
Ew. What is wrong with people?
It was grease.
I'm sure it wasn't even real bacon grease, but they really did feed bacon to the pig, which apparently got him in a lot of trouble. But
I would imagine
cannibalism.
The
bacon,
the pig liked it.
Pig eats other meat.
Well, if you were fed, pigs eat everything. Meat and it was cooked,
right, that's the thing. So did it hurt the pig?
That's disgusting. The pig probably needed therapy.
You forced
after
him
that.
Into becoming a cannibal.
Yeah, well, I'm not them.
You're not what?
I'm not them. I didn't do it. It's not my fault.
Gross. I enjoy bacon. I think that the hype that it gets is very strange, specifically when you have like bacon flavored perfume or lipstick or lip gloss. I just think it's so weird. But I do enjoy bacon.
They have bacon flavored ice cream.
Yeah.
Ugh, no.
Like it just
when it goes to that cliff, I think it's very overrated. I won't eat it like every single weekend or every single day, like at all. It's more of an occasional food for me.
I don't even put it on like cheeseburgers and stuff. I'll have it, you know, with eggs or something. I'll have bacon on the side, but like, I don't like the texture it creates on like hamburgers and stuff. It's okay. I wouldn't not eat it if it had bacon, but I'm not going to pay extra money to get it put on my burger.
But I do agree with Shannon. There needs to be a specific way it's cooked for it to be in hamburgers because I don't want it to be so floppy. And I will use that word where it's like you bite into the burger and then it just comes out.
Right.
No.
My litmus test is if I can pick it up and hold it sideways and it's still straight, then that's good enough.
You're good to go. All right. Bacon. All right. Next one. Wearing socks to bed is a good idea.
This one depends for me as well.
Clinically speaking, it has been proven. There was a study somewhere in Asia. I forget where it was, but, and it's actually like an ancient thing that goes back thousands of years, but they did scientifically prove that, people's sleep health is much better if their heads are cooler while they sleep and their feet are warmer. If that involves wearing socks to get that warmth, that's up to you. But technically speaking, this is supposed to actually legitimately be a good idea. I have done it. I've not done it. I don't, you know, either way is whatever.
I don't like wearing socks to bed, but if I'm sleeping at a place or something where I know I'm going to wake up cold, then I'll wear them. Like I have a friend's apartment where almost every time I've stayed there, I go to bed like super hot and I wake up super cold. And so when I stay there, I'll typically wear socks because I'm sleeping on a couch. I don't know if I'm going to kick the blanket off, what have you. But like at home, I have like, especially in winter, I have a heavier blanket. My room gets super hot in the summer and super humid. So like I ain't wearing no socks.
Right.
Like, you know, it super depends on the situation because I like being able to sleep and I sleep better when I'm cool. But I don't want to be cold. So it depends on where I am and if I know what the room is like and if I have a heavy enough blanket. But typically I do not wear socks.
Or if you're traveling and you're in a hotel and you're wondering when the last time they actually cleaned the carpets are.
I'll wear socks around the night.
There's two things when it comes to this.
Oh, no.
One, I do agree. I always have bad things to say, right? In the summer, it's less likely for me to wear socks when I go to sleep. But I generally enjoy when my feet are warmer. I sleep better. That's just Mm-hmm. Makes me, it's nice. Cause when my feet are cold and I'm more focused on that than me going to sleep, it's just a weird thing. And then the other one, which is much more sad, is that, and this is because of childhood trauma, I like wearing socks because if something happens, I'm ready to put my shoes on.
Oh, I thought you were going to say just, if the monster reached up from under your bed, your feet were safe.
No, I don't care about monsters.
Yeah, they
under
grab
my bed.
At your foot, but they get the sock, and the sock comes off.
Yeah, that's why you.
And you can get
that's terrifying.
That's why you couldn't stick your light. No, that's why people. Some like the joke when you're young is like you don't keep your foot out the blanket because if your foot
that.
Is out the
I
blanket, if your foot is out the blanket, the monster's gonna grab it. That's
are,
the
are
whole
we back
thing.
On the parental thing again, Shannon. I don't
no.
know. Like, what, okay.
The monster no, under no, the bed. You can't. Yeah. You have to keep your legs under the blanket because if your leg was out, the monster would reach up and get it. That was the whole thing.
I need to be completely covered by my covers to feel safe. I cannot have a limb out and dangling. Even today,
the monster will get it.
The monster will get me.
The monster will get it.
We're
people
so
still
strange.
Make that
I
joke.
Wish there were monsters around because then like if I'm awake in the middle of the night worrying about it, at least there's a good reason. Like
it's
at least that's interesting.
We had like all real monsters and we had Monsters Inc. It was like, oh man, they're coming out the closet, yeah. They under the bed, they everywhere. Keep your
yeah,
legs.
Heaven forbid
the
Monsters
the
Inc. monsters show up and take you away to a wonderful Pixar world of amusement and wonder that would
but
be so horrible.
But you didn't know that till later, that. Until Boo escaped and got in.
Then don't go to bed halfway through the movie. There. Finish Gosh. The movie before you go to bed. See? Problem
but
solved.
They didn't like humans until
they
Boo.
Did at the end?
Yeah, until Boo. I'm
right?
older
That's
than Boo, Eric. It was too late for me.
You were already done.
I'm even older than that, and I don't know. The whole monster in the bed thing just didn't, I don't know.
It's a thing. I made my mom in the middle of the night go and check up on me just in case if I was safe or not. Found out eventually that she lied about checking up on
yeah.
me.
I ca- yeah.
I felt so betrayed.
Big surprise. Oh that's one of those things that change when you become
her,
a parent.
Eric.
And then all of a sudden, like once you have a kid, then it's going to be like, oh, now I get what my mom did. Yeah, it'll make perfect sense.
The trust is not there anymore. Yeah. Anyways, moving on from wearing socks to monsters under our beds. That went really sidetracked. Alternative pets are for weird people.
Define alternative pets.
So I
peacocks.
Guess it would be like peacocks, chameleons,
yes.
your friend,
exotic pets.
Jiminy Cricket. Yes, exotic
yes.
pets.
Yes, for weird people.
Do you agree with
yes.
this?
Yes.
Eric,
why do
I'm
you,
weird?
Well, what exotic pet do you have?
Well, what exotic pet I did have? I used to have snakes. I used to have a chameleon, a
well,
hedgehog.
I don't consider... Here's... When I hear alternative pets, I think like pets you aren't supposed to have.
Oh,
that's
then
the
no.
first
exotic
thing
pets,
I think
like, things
of.
Things you have to have a special license for and the state has certain laws for.
Or like... You know,
not something you can go down to PetSmart
your therapy peacock,
oh, no.
or like you know, because I don't. Snakes are pets. Chameleons can be pets. Like those are things that I would consider people might have as pets. And hedgehogs are quickly becoming one of those things that people have as pets. It's just, but if somebody said like I have a pet, a possum, I'd be like, where? Like what? Like. You know, or if somebody said, I have a pet, I don't know, a pet lynx, like, that's allowed? Like, or
not
I have
in
a
most
pet,
places.
I have a pet coyote, or, you know, things that aren't normally pets is what I can, you know, this woman, like, who wanted to bring her therapy peacock onto a plane. Like,
right.
you have a pet peacock, you consider that a pet? Like, that's not a pet. That's
like, if it's
no.
something that you go to the
that's
zoo.
That's a zoo
to
animal,
see,
yeah.
Then it's not. To see, to me, a pet is something that you can interact with. A fish is obviously an exception, but like, to me, a dog is a pet, a cat is a pet. A hamster, a rabbit, those, you know, those can work as pets. Snakes, okay. Yeah. I, I'll give you that one. But then there's a whole level of pets that it's not really a pet. It's a wild animal that you keep in a container that when you take it out, it's not necessarily going to attack you because you do happen to give it food, but it's not domesticated. It doesn't have any emotional bond with you. It's just you give it food and you keep it in a container.
Like a tarantula?
Yeah, like a tarantula. Like if you go outside and pick up some creature off the grass, a spider or whatever, and you take it home and you put it in a jar and you give it food, it's not really a pet. It's just shy of a science project. It's your own personal zoo. It's not a pet, in my opinion. And I know I'm weird. I'm in the minority on this. It's fine. But yeah, like exotic pets are for weird people.
I wouldn't call them weird, just interesting people.
Yeah. Okay, so exotic pets are for people who I need to find a polite way to say that they're weird. Yeah. Yep.
All right, moving on. It is okay to not have an opinion on something. This is an interesting one.
I mean,
one.
Yes, but not having an opinion on something is still having an opinion on something.
Exactly.
But you're not having an opinion on the thing. You're having an opinion about whether you have an opinion about the thing. So it's a little more meta than that. You're having a thought.
Hard to believe that you don't have an opinion on something, because
you should avoid having an opinion on something if you don't have enough information.
Well, yeah.
A valid opinion. And I think that that's the one case where it is okay to not have an opinion on something. If you know for a fact, listen, I'm not qualified to speak on this and I don't know anything about this. I mean, like, so for example, me with female anatomy issues, I've taken anatomy and physiology in school. I was majoring in sonography, and I can, you know, cross-sectional anatomy and, ultrasound physics and female anatomy and stuff. I have a clinical understanding of it, but there's a whole different side of being a woman that is involved with that I can't pretend to have an opinion on because I'm ignorant of that. I have no understanding of it. So I acknowledge that I don't have an opinion because I'm lacking the basic information to be able to form a valid one.
I think it's so hard for me to understand because most people have opinions anyway when they shouldn't. It's hard to hear someone say, I don't have an opinion on this, when the majority of the world loves to have opinions on things that they don't have a place to have an opinion on. Like, you're entitled to have an opinion, but you're not necessarily qualified to have that opinion. And most people do not say that. So, of course, it's weird for me to hear someone say, you know, oh, well, I don't have an opinion on it because I don't know. It's like, well, plenty of people don't see it that way. Plenty of people think. So
absolutely
it's something that's so hard for me to hear. I don't have an opinion on that because I'm so used to people having opinions on things that they don't necessarily have the background to have an opinion on it.
Right. But they don't want to feel like,
I don't want to be left out.
Right. That's exactly it. Like, they feel like they should have an opinion. So they form one, but the opinion is formed on either incomplete knowledge or sometimes utter ignorance entirely.
Mm.
But they form one so that they have one, because if they don't, they feel stupid or they feel lacking or they feel like an intellectual failure or they feel like they have nothing to contribute to a conversation. And the reality is sometimes you don't, and that's okay. And maybe you should, instead of speaking, maybe you should be quiet and listen instead.
Yeah.
But you're right. Everybody does have opinions, it seems, even when they shouldn't.
Yeah. Like, I it was a long time ago. It was shortly after I started my new job. I was having a conversation with one of the people I work with, and he is like further left than I am. Mm-hmm. Pretty far down there, but not like in a super aggressive way. Like, he doesn't get in your face and about it, just comes up sometimes. And we were talking, and, you know, I was talking about something, and he said, you know, you seem to have a lot of insight into this, and you seem to be very calm when you talk about it. I said, well, because I've learned that I learned that I have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I see stories, when I hear people speak, I listen to them. I don't just, you know, try and override them with what my perspective is, because my perspective is like, I forget, we were talking about something that had to do with the LGBT community. And I said, you know, I have a place in this, but I don't live the life of, like, say, a transgender person. So I can't decide what's right, but I can listen to them mm-hmm. and see where we can go, or see where I can improve, or see how I can help with a conversation without deciding that my opinion's right just because of what I know.
Right.
And, you know, he said, you know, I really appreciate that. And I said, that's just, you know, I've learned I have to listen mm-hmm. and I have to learn. That is what I have learned. And so when it comes to, like, things that are sensitive that I do not necessarily understand, I've started to learn to listen.
Right.
And that's typically how my opinions form, are based on what people who actually live those experiences tell me.
Right. There's a reason you have twice as many eyes and twice as many ears as you do mouth. Mm-hmm. And it's because you should probably spend about twice as much time listening as you do speaking.
Yeah. That's very true. All right. We have three left. So we'll go.
I'm worried about the next one. I'm really anxious about this next one, guys. I don't know if you know why, but I'm worried.
I don't know.
Okay. Think about it.
Go ahead. Say it.
It's weird when grown adults are obsessed with Disney.
No.
Shannon, what do you have to say?
No, I'm like,
should the question be what you have to confess? Is that what?
You're getting closer.
Okay.
I know a few adults
who me too.
Take a lot of comfort in Disney. Mm-hmm. One of whom is a breast cancer survivor. And so while I personally can't, you know, I love Disney. While I can't personally make it entirely my life about Disney, I certainly refuse to judge people who do, because I do not know their reasoning behind it. Have I in the past been like, oh boy? Yeah, absolutely. Because there are some to me, it depends. Are you an adult who is obsessed with Disney? Or are you an adult who acts like a child who is obsessed with Disney? Those are two very different things. But I will not judge an adult for being obsessed with Disney if their intentions are pure and personal.
I've had a conversation with somebody once, and I just I found the entire thing humorous, and you'll see why in a minute. So I just kind of nodded at my head a lot and say, I don't know either. But he was going off about all of these quote unquote Disney princesses, and he wasn't referring to the characters. He was talking about some women he knew that were really into Disney, and, you know, they would collect the Disney pins from the theme parks, and you know, every now and then they would take trips together. They'd get like a group of people together and they'd travel down to the Disney parks, and they had like some lithographs and stuff and prints on their walls, or they had little figurines in the display cases and stuff. And he's just going on and on and on about this. And I'm like, yeah, no, they're wow. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. And he's talking about how obsessed they are and stuff. As we're walking through the basement of his house, where he's got seven
I know where this is going.
Football jerseys hanging on the wall in the first room before we get to his man cave, where he's got multiple autographed footballs, autographed baseballs. Then we get into a, and I am not into sports.
People I mean, also to the Star Wars. Know this.
And yeah. And I just to kind of humor myself, I asked him some question about some random like football stat. I was just kind of half making up. I don't even understand what the question was that I was asking. And he just went on for like 20 minutes straight without taking a breath. And I'm just sitting here looking at him like, dude, do you understand what a hypocrite you are? Do you understand how foolish you are with, you know, these big foam fingers on the side of your wall and like pictures of you wearing makeup all over your face at a football game to make it look like your team and all this other stuff. And you're ripping on people for being obsessed with just something else, a different fandom in a room that is a shrine to your fandom. And I don't, football's fine. I have no problem with people who are into football, but like, then don't get up my butt about the fact that I like Star Wars. As you said a minute ago, Shannon, for some people, having a fandom is a comfort to them for whatever else is going on in their life. Now, the word obsession is kind of critical in this sentence too, though, because it can get to the point where it's unhealthy when you are escaping enough from reality that you are not addressing real needs in reality the way that you should be. So there's definitely a line that can be crossed, but it has nothing to do with Disney. It has, you know, are obsessed with blank.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is we all know which adults are going to be associated with an obsession with Disney. We all know. It's always negative when it's that party. Like I said, when you were speaking, Star Wars. Sure, by the general population, some Star Wars fanboys may be judged. But then the Star Wars fanboys turn around and may judge women who are obsessed with Disney. It's you don't get to play that game. You're very obsessed with Star Wars. You can't turn around and do the same thing just because people do it to you.
I will say I've seen, and it's not just because I'm a Star Wars fan, but within the Star Wars fan community, I've seen less people in that community poke fun of Disney fans than I have in either Star Trek.
Oh, it's just an example. Doctor I'm using Who? It okay. as an example. Oh, okay. I'm not saying that
it them
is...
in particular are bad
no.
about it.
No, no, no. I'm not saying Star Wars fans are. Okay. I'm saying the type of people who tend to be Star Wars fans, quote unquote.
Now, wait a minute. Isn't that she's just saying the same thing, basically?
No. No, I'm not.
I'm not saying people like you. I'm just saying like people who tend to be like you.
Do you want me to say specifically what I'm talking about?
I might be able to understand it.
I'm saying men, better, boys.
But... Okay, well, then you could have just said men.
I was trying to jump around it so I wouldn't get emails. No, let's, Eric?
I'll say it. I'll say it for you. Men tend to be
Yeah.
They
and a good
tend
chunk
to
of geek
at,
men, not all of them, but a good chunk of them.
But a lot of it
to
has to
around.
Do with the fact that it's perceived by a lot of men. And this is a whole nother discussion we could do for another podcast and maybe should. It's perceived as a femininity thing. And a lot of the marketing for Disney stuff over the decades, I'm not talking about today. When I was a kid, we grew up, we didn't have the internet. We had toys that were for boys. Toys that were for girls, and then we had Play-Doh.
Yeah.
Like you had a couple of a Slinky. Like you had a couple of things that were gender neutral, but G.I. Joe Transformers and He-Man were for boys, Strawberry Shortcake, My Little Ponies, and other stuff that was for girls. Okay. Disney traditionally they have marketed merchandising more successfully toward women.
Right.
And I know there are a lot of men who like their wives have what's the guy that makes like the quilted looking figurines and stuff? The name's right on the tip of my tongue. There's like a whole thing. It's really popular, but I forget now. But different Disney figurines and different Disney decorations and stuff. And guys don't tend to do that sort of thing. They do other things. It's sports generally has been the opposite. It's been catered more toward what is considered to be more masculine fans.
Right.
And I know women that roll their eyes whenever their husbands are talking football or baseball. But then I lived in Cleveland for a while. I worked in an office with predominantly women, and they would not stop talking about baseball long enough for me to ask where the restrooms were. Like
I love sports.
It's not, it doesn't have to be a gender thing. And I think we all know that. Right. And that's not the rabbit hole we're trying to go down here. But yes, so to your point.
Typically, Disney is associated with women. And of course, there tends to be, especially it's been noted a lot recently because people are picking up on it. Things that are associated with women tend to be made fun of more or judged more or told that are bad.
Yeah, sadly.
And so Disney is going to be one of those things because for years and years and years, it was easier to market it to women because a lot of the movies, especially way before, you know, the golden renaissance of, you know, the 90s and the early 2000s, it was princess movies. That's what they were known for. Yeah. And so it became associated with women. A lot of the stuff they did, like, you know, some men, yeah, would have a nostalgia for these movies because they were raised on them. Like Alice in Wonderland is a little more kind of in the middle, or the Sword in the Stone.
But I never went out and got Beauty and the Beast memorabilia. I never went out and got, I like the movie, but like, I wouldn't.
But that's what I'm saying. It's just nostalgia. It's not, you know, it's not marketed to you. Now we have, and I'm not necessarily talking about their acquisitions, I'm not talking about Marvel or Star Wars, but there have been movies that have been, you know, more marketable or enjoyed by men since the 90s, since the Golden Renaissance. You have The Lion King, Tarzan, Toy Story, like the Pixar films in general. It ends, but it still kept that association with women. And recently,
well, and you could argue Pixar is kind of a different, it's almost more like Marvel. And, I mean, that was more of an acquisition.
But they've, all of their movies have been associated with Disney. People still consider them partially Disney movies. So, you know, but it never lost that connotation. And as always with things that women like, if women like it, it's a girl thing. Like, we never take them seriously. And so I don't necessarily like the connotation of this because I know what it's saying. It's saying women who are obsessed with Disney, grown women, because I don't know a lot of grown men who are obsessed with Disney.
No, I don't know a single one. And I'm pretty plugged into multiple different fan cultures. So, I'll give you
All I'm going to say with this one is that the obsessions are not good because they can lead to bad things. Any obsession over fandoms or anything like that can be a slippery slope that you don't want to get into. I love Disney. I mean, Stitch is in my shirt right now. But it doesn't come to the point where I'm like collecting everything and anything Disney. But I, to each their own, just because you enjoy a fandom or something it doesn't make you weird. It really doesn't.
We love you, Liz.
It's all the other things that make you weird.
Yes, I was going to mention Liz.
Yeah, for those who don't know.
That's why I was nervous about this topic.
For those who don't know, we do have someone on our network who is very much a Disney fan. And that's, I respect that. I mean, we've got people very much Doctor Who fans, obviously very much Star Wars fans because we have Star Wars shows, Expanse fans, you know, et cetera. There's nothing wrong with it. I think what part of what it is,
hyperfixation is a hell of a drug.
The Disney stuff, if you are a Disney fan, there's so much available to you for merchandising and for experiences like the theme parks and stuff that it's a lot easier to dive into an immersive situation with that fandom. Like the Expanse, there's no Expanse theme park. There are limited number of Expanse merchandising things. So like me showing Shannon some really cool Expanse piece of merchandise that I got that she's maybe never seen before, it's probably not going to happen because she's already aware of every single piece of available merchandising. Well, in part,
you mean
because
all
there isn't
four
much.
Items that all you can buy officially.
That's my point. Disney has been flooding the market for, and to be fair, there is not a single merchandiser on the planet who is as good at marketing their materials and producing desired materials as Disney. They are the most skilled at this and have been for decade upon decade upon decade. So I think what happens is sometimes the people who are really into Disney, because it's so easy to immerse in that fandom, stand out more because they end up being more visual about it. They're more visible, rather. So I think part of it's just that circumstance as well.
All right. So we have two, so we'll go through these really quickly.
Yeah, the next one's really easy.
Yes. The way that you eat a Kit Kat bar, do you break it into pieces and eat it, or do you just grab the whole entire four bars?
Are you just a heathen?
I can't believe this is a question.
Are you a, like, animal?
What kind of person even?
Who just takes a Kit Kat bar and just bites the whole thing? Like, you're a monster.
People who have friends that are OCD and want to no longer have them as friends. Those are the people who do that. Yeah.
You have to break it That's why it's give, break me right. off a piece of that Kit Kat bar.
We That's have the a whole picture point. In our show notes, and it shows
it's
the
driving me insane.
It's so like sorry. An animal took a bite out of the whole thing. Like, it's just, it's, no. You no.
How do you even, Kit Kat bars aren't even that small. So how are you doing this? Why are you doing this to yourself?
They have big mouths, Shannon.
No!
All right, moving along.
I think we broke okay. Shannon. I'm surprised that of all the questions, this is the one that broke Shannon. Though I'm not that far away from it myself, so.
Break all the bars and eat them one at a time. You will enjoy it a lot better. You will feel good afterwards. It lasts longer. Yes.
You can save it for later.
So pleasurable.
I wouldn't go that far.
All right, last one before Shannon goes more into the deep end.
Before Shannon goes and gets some Kit Kat bars just so that she can eat them properly to make it feel like all is right with the world.
I can't.
All right, so the final one is, there is such a thing as an ugly baby.
There is not so such bad. A thing as a not ugly baby. They all look like space aliens with goo
they
covering
them.
They
all look weird, I mean, like, it's at not, first.
Huh?
They all look weird at first. Yes. All of them.
Yes.
Because their faces, excuse me, their faces are all, they can't even open their eyes. I mean, we are the only mammal species on this planet where babies are born before they finish cooking. Okay, because the female body cannot handle more than the amount of time that the baby is in them. We are the only one where the baby is not developed by the time it comes out.
Oh,
right?
I don't know. I just had some kittens born on our front porch out here that really looked like deformed rats and probably should have stayed inside the mom cat a little bit longer because they were pretty disgusting looking.
Yeah, but I mean, half the time, after a couple of days, those animals can still walk, right?
No, these took about probably not quite.
But you already said they looked like they were premature anyway.
No, I said they looked like deformed rats.
Well, I'm just saying, babies all look weird.
Yes.
They can't do anything for like a year anyway. Like, They look
they
fine
can do anything
eventually.
For 5 years. I've tried to put them to work. They don't do anything. They just sit around and play video games. I'm telling you, useless.
Like, they get there eventually. They get cute eventually when, like, the first few weeks have passed, but they all look weird at first anyway.
Yep.
A little bit.
Space aliens, I'm telling you.
I wouldn't say they're ugly, just weird.
Their heads are still kind of cone-shaped because the cartilage in their skull hasn't, you know, the bone hasn't developed yet and it's still like kind of squishy and it's,
Well, that's what I meant, by the way. That's what I meant. Like, their brains aren't even done.
When people show me pictures of their baby, I say the same thing every time. I say, oh, you must be so proud every time, because I'm not going to tell them that their baby looks cute because it's a lie.
Yeah.
Every time.
Like, after a few weeks, yes, the baby is very cute, and none of them are cute for the first few weeks. None of them.
Nope.
And it's a lie if you say it.
Yep. Go ahead, Andrea.
All right. Well, my head is killing me after these unpopular opinions. Do you guys have anything else to say? Any other unpopular opinion that we didn't go through?
Oh, no, nothing we didn't go through. Just I want to go back and spend another 3 or 4 hours on some of them.
Okay, well, if anybody wants to hear Eric discuss some of these more in depth, then you can send us an email. My head is about to explode.
I'm sorry.
This so was fun.
You want me to wrap up the closing at this point?
Yes.
Or okay. I think that was a signal. Okay, so normally this is where I would say we would love to get your feedback on this, but for this particular episode, I'm a little frightened of that.
I want to hear everybody.
Oh god.
Okay. Well, you know,
Andrea, last time we asked everyone for all of their opinions, what happened?
I enjoyed it. I had an anxiety attack, but
you didn't even read the long ones, so
that's okay.
Don't tell anybody.
So Yes, we do want to hear your opinions on this. You can send us email at gettingsidetracked@randomchatter.com. Though if I were you, I would shorten it to gs@randomchatter.com because it's easier to type. And you can find us on Twitter. We are part of the Random Chatter Network, so just use that Twitter account, @randomchatter. I'm on Twitter, @EricBlythe. That's E-R-I-K-B-L-Y-T-H-E. Shannon, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me at ShankBeezy.
All right, and Andrea?
You can find me at CatsBears. That's K-A-T-Z-B-E-A-R-Z. And please do not ask me how to say.
Oh, pizza.
Jeez. Oh.
Okay. Thanks, Shannon.
Should I point out to people they don't have to spell out Zed? It's not Z-E-D. We'll cover that in another episode. Okay. How to speak Canadian. That'll be a whole nother. All right. So be sure to check out the other shows we have in the Random Chatter Network. We actually have some new shows. If you haven't checked those out recently, we've got Fangirl Confessional, Guardians of the MCU, The Caped Chronicles. We just relaunched The Outer Rim. We are about to launch a new Star Wars sub-network. It's just basically just a collection of all of our Star Wars shows. We've got a lot of activity going on in the Random Chatter Network. If you haven't already, you should definitely check it out. Spread the word about the show. Getting Sidetracked is a very new podcast. And, you know, we've had some scheduling conflicts, especially since we rotate hosts in and out. So it's just kind of part of the nature of what we're trying to do with the show. So, we're only just now getting to the point where we've got a regular schedule that we're going to be keeping for it. So it's been a little hard to get word out about the show. So we could really use your help. Tell your friends about us, share us out on social media when there's a new episode that comes out, or, you know, talk about the topic on social media, you know, tag us in it and say, hey, on this particular thing, here's what I think. Get a conversation going. Just, you know, be civil to one another. All right, be respectful, be polite, but talk about it and tag us in on it. We would love that. Tell your friends about us. Leave us reviews, especially if you are getting the network podcast feed. If you could hop into the feed just for Getting Sidetracked and leave us a little quick review, maybe a paragraph about what it is you like about the show so that other people know whether it might be a good fit for them as well. And we would love it if you haven't already. Come talk to us. Join us at our Discord server. If you don't know what Discord is, it's kind of like Slack. It started out as kind of a gaming community sort of thing, but now it's grown into a much larger system for people to have servers containing their own communities to discuss things. And it's awesome. We have a lot of great participants there. You can join for free. Go to randomchatter.com/discord. We have a kind of a main lobby area, and then we've got different channels for each one of the individual podcasts. So you can actually come into the Discord server. Go into the Getting Sidetracked channel and discuss any of these there. Any of these things that we discussed today. You know you want to. You know there's at least one of these that you're dying to yell at us about. That is the place to do it. There'll probably be other people there that'll agree with you. It'll be some great conversations there. If you want to help support the network financially, we do have a Patreon account. In fact, that will unlock a lot more of Discord for you, no matter how much you donate. Most of our donors just donate $1 a month. And that's fine with us. It's fine if you don't donate anything at all, but this does help us kind of keep the lights on for the network, and we really appreciate the support. As a reward for that, we have different perks, and like I said, the perk that's available to all of the donors is the unlocking of like another maybe 50 or 60 different very active channels in Discord. So I would recommend checking that out. So again, randomchatter.com/discord, randomchatter.com/patreon. Finally, the music you hear in this podcast is Three Piece Suit by Blue Stolly. Andrea, thank you for running the show this episode. Shannon, thank you for participating and helping me educate Andrea on how to say the word pizza.
Pizza.
I appreciate because it, guys.
It was more difficult than I would have expected it to be.
And I'm not that's saying it that for word this ever episode. Again.
We'll have to have a pizza party later on. And that's what we should do for the convention. We'll talk about that later. All right, that's it for this episode. Take care, everybody.